We're talking about finding wonder in the human body this hour. Gavin Francis is a general practice physician in Edinburgh, Scotland. And when he's not taking care of patients, he's often writing. His books include Adventures in Human Being and most recently Shapeshifters, in which he explores one of the most common characteristics of life as an embodied human, change. He told Steve Paulson about how medicine is both an art and a science.
So I'm guessing that as a doctor, you see the common everyday cases and probably also some extraordinary cases as well. And I guess I'm wondering if there is anything in particular that surprises you or maybe even still amazes you about the human body.
Well, there's something surprising or even amazing happens every week or two. It's one of the great pleasures of medical practice. It's endlessly varied. From week to week, I'm always stunned by the kinds of things that walk through the door. And I guess my books are an attempt to kind of communicate the sense of wonder I still feel, not just about the complexity, the intricacy, the beauty, the elegance even of the human body, but also how there's tremendous capacities in the body to heal. Mm-hmm. And as a physician, we're often trying to take advantages of those changes and try and help the body along.
Do you find this amazing that the body just has these natural powers of regeneration, of healing?
Yeah.
It just sort of does it by itself. It knows how to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's phenomenal. And the scale of it is truly extraordinary too. You know, when you think of just the simplicity of you reacting to a viral infection. So somebody sneezes some viral infection on you. And the way your immune system can respond to that by very, very quickly recognizing if you've ever been exposed to it before, if you have been exposed to it before, very quickly managing to engage and bring online all the white blood cells that can produce the antibodies to get rid of that infection. They quickly start multiplying, they start pumping out the right antibodies. And lo and behold, you don't catch the infection. And that whole thing your body has done for you without you having any conscious awareness of it at all. I think immunology, the way we fight infections, and also neurology, the way our nervous system works, are two of the most extraordinary aspects of our humanity, and they're actually still very little understood.
Give me an example of one of these more ambiguous cases where, you know, you're using your intuition, you and the patient are trying to come up with a story about what's happening. Give me an example of that and why that's so important to develop a good narrative.
Well, there's so many conditions which fall under the category of medically unexplained symptoms. And they can be recurrent headaches. They could be recurrent abdominal cramps. They could be even odd rashes or episodes of fatigue. And when the doctor carries out a full history to try and find if there's any of the particularly well-known culprits for these symptoms can be found, they'd run a whole set of blood tests and imaging scans and so on, and they perhaps still can't find any cause for this fatigue or the recurrent headaches or for the recurrent abdominal cramps. Then we're into the realm of trying to understand what these symptoms really mean. When do they come on? What are the symptoms exacerbated by? How is the patient affected by these kind of symptoms? What do they hope for from treatment? Because when medical science and when modern Western medicine has drawn a blank at trying to understand where they're coming from, then we're in another realm of trying to approach them from a different perspective. And I think those kinds of symptoms are really, really very common.
And then there are some other examples of sort of this interesting connection between brain and mind. For instance, there's a phenomenon that I've heard various people describe that they're experiencing a heart attack and they have this sense of dread that they're going to die. And in fact, it seems to be one of the diagnostic signals of cardiac arrest. Even if the chest pain is not so bad, they have this sense that, oh my God, the end is near. How do you explain this?
That phenomenon that you're describing is still called in the medical textbooks, we call it in Latin, angor animi or angor animi. It means anguish of the soul. And it's still used regularly on hospital wards and in emergency rooms to describe that experience that somebody has that they're imminently about to die. And we take it very, very seriously as physicians. And I think it shows that the old idea that from the chin down, our bodies are just kind of plumbing and almost going ahead like a robot, that's not true. Actually, the connection between our mind and our mental state and the rest of our body is very, very intimate.
But I still don't understand how that happens. Somehow, people just know that something really dire is going to happen. What do you think is going on there?
I think our perspective that the mind and the body have been so separated, that position is just wrong. So we don't fully understand all the different ways in which the body and brain are communicating. You know, it's often described that we have five senses, but actually we have a lot more senses than that, because there's all sorts of senses that are going on in terms of your balance, in terms of your proprioception, your understanding of where your limbs are in space. You have senses that are to do with whether your bladder is full or empty. You have senses that are to do with whether you're feeling short of breath or thirsty. There are all kinds of different senses that are going on that are far, far more than the classical five senses. And when you have a disturbance in some of those, this is the way in which I think we're coming to appreciate a fundamental shift like that. If you're going into a heart attack, there's changes in your blood pressure, there's changes in the feel of your pulse all over your body, and all these things we can actually sense at subconscious level.
Yeah, it makes you wonder that as we use more technology in medicine, for instance, an artificial heart, would people have those same sensations? You could have an artificial heart without a pulse, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been a fair bit of research done into this. You know, some of the artificial hearts, they pump in a continuous, ceaseless fashion. So the blood just moves ceaselessly through the body instead of having a pulsatile flow, which is how our body is used to be. And there is a theory that in some sense, our brain needs that pulse, that there's a kind of connection between that pulsatile flow of blood through our brains and our sense of well-being. So people who go on a heart-lung bypass machine for very long surgical operations, and they come round from that surgery, often describe a really profound shift in their mood, often feel very low, feel very depressed, sometimes disinhibited, almost like they've been drinking. And we don't understand why that has happened. And there is a theory that is to do with the loss of this pulsatile flow through the brain.
Fascinating. It almost sounds like you're saying that our understanding of the body and what doctors do, I mean, the practice of medicine, is to some degree still as much art as it is science.
Well, yeah, I think very much. I mean, the doctors have to know what to do, but they also have to know how to do it, when to do it, why to do it. And all those things are still very much an art. And, you know, I think very much I find in my work as a physician, it's helped by the fact that I also work as a writer and that I write books and think a lot about language. But the two, they go hand in hand. So being a writer, thinking a lot about language is helped by medicine, but medicine also helps the writing because there's so much art in medicine and in its practice.
Are you saying that because you were a writer, that makes you a better doctor?
Yeah, because as a writer, I'm very interested in people's stories. I'm very interested in seeing how they position themselves in their own life story and those around them. I'm trained constantly as a writer in how to say things concisely and elegantly and quickly. And being able to communicate elegantly and concisely is of huge advantage to doctors. So yeah, definitely being a writer helps my medical practice.
Just sort of getting back to this notion of the wonder of the body. You say that there are some parts of our body that are really kind of miracles of engineering. The foot, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
What's so remarkable about the foot, the way it's engineered?
Well, most biology students of our generation were told, of course, that the human hand was a miracle of engineering and that we have these opposable thumbs that make us so much more special than the apes. But actually, the human hand isn't that different from an ape's hand. But what is really unique about us is our feet, because all the other mammals have feet that are adapted for going around on all fours. And our feet are beautifully engineered for supporting our weight on two legs for a few different reasons. So the shape of the arches of the foot, there are three different arches two down its length and one across the width of the foot that sustain the weight, just like a stone-built bridge has arches. The bones are actually shaped the same way. And then there are ligaments on the underside of the arches of the foot that are almost like the staples underneath a stone bridge that hold it together. And we also have special tendons that come down from the calf. They support and lift the centre of the arch, just the way that a suspension bridge is supported. So, yeah, there's a great deal about the human foot that I find truly miraculous. And it's such a pity that, you know, medical students, they always leave it to last, and they come into their anatomy exams and they've never studied the foot. But yeah, as a physician, I'm always dealing with people with problems with their feet. So,
so you're saying kind of in the deep evolutionary sense, the foot is maybe what made us human.
Yeah, it's probable that the changes in the foot are what enabled us to stand upright, and then that freed our hands to be able to become toolmakers. And it's that process which allowed the great evolutionary leap for our brains to start developing.
Hmm. Are there particular cases you've seen that are just so out of the ordinary, so extraordinary that you sort of think, wow, how does the body do that?
I wonder, behind your questions, I'm sometimes wondering if you're thinking of particular parts of this book that you've just read. There's one chapter in there that talks about a patient I met who had a horn growing out of the center of her forehead.
That's exactly what I was wondering about.
No, the body is endlessly surprising, yeah. And that is an example. Human beings can even grow horns sometimes, and then no 2 days are ever the same in clinical practice. You never know what the next patient is going to say to you.
Okay, you have to explain this. How can a horn grow out of someone's forehead?
Well, there's lots of different reasons a horn can grow, believe it or not.
Okay.
Sometimes a horn is derived from the kind of tissue that makes sweat glands. Sometimes it's derived from the skin that just does the surface, you know, the waterproof part of the skin.
Mm-hmm.
It just undergoes a process whereby instead of flaking off as it should do, it just gets more adherent and grows and grows and grows and grows. And if you have one patch of skin that keeps growing a thickened layer and it just grows and grows and grows, then you end up with a horn. You know, there's this wonderful iconography of Moses from the Bible. He's always shown with horns. Horns are supposed to give you this idea of dignity and authority. And I'm not convinced that in our modern world, people that grow horns have that sense.
Right. What did you do with the woman with the horn growing on her forehead?
Well, she was actually very good-natured about it. That particular case, I was in a dermatology clinic, and the senior consultant in the dermatology clinic made arrangements to have the horn removed and a small skin graft put over. And the patient turned around and said, well, don't do it too soon because I've got a fancy dress party next week. I was thinking of going as a unicorn. So, yeah, sometimes people's sense of humour about their own predicament can be helpful.
That was Steve Paulson talking with Scottish physician and writer Gavin Francis. His most recent book is called Shapeshifters. Come on.